All right.
Action.
It's camera. Action.
I have no idea.
It's a holy scene, apparently.
Oh, yeah. Cool beans.
But then books are always holy, right?
Sure. Anyway, hello. I'm Brad this time.
I'm Kara.
Not Kara. I'm not Kara.
But maybe I am Brad. You don't know.
I know. Our brains are one. Does that count? Speaking of brains, we have a third brain. We have a third brain.
Seems like this is Pinky and the Brain times
yes.
two.
Yes. Speaking of, like, said third brain, we have Stephanie. Say hello.
Woot woot.
Hi, Steph.
I said say hello, but you know, that's fine. Whatever. Woot woot could
be a party.
Maybe
yeah,
that's
true.
Like Minion for hello.
Maybe.
I feel like we should invoke Samuel L. Jackson and say, hold on to your butts.
I like that.
I like
that's
that
what
too.
This episode like that. Is going
to
be.
That sounds like
first,
a plan.
When you said Minions, I was just like, banana? But, you know, again, don't yell at me, copyright lawyers.
Oh, I didn't think about that.
The little, you know, the little yellow guys.
Yeah. little
yeah.
Minions.
And they yell banana a lot.
The banana.
Yeah. See?
Yes. We're just awesome.
We're
just
I know.
So
oh.
spectacular. Yes, we sell important books. We do.
Books about Minions.
About.
Yes.
I mean, I would read that.
Yep.
What are we doing yes. today, Brad?
We have an interview because we're adults and we interview people. But she's also worked. Well, maybe I'll let her tell us. There's a little tease. I will let her. Introduce yourself, Stephanie.
Or Steph.
Or Steph Porter.
I was like, I call her Steph, but I don't know if she's one of those like, no, call me Stephanie. And I'm like, okay, cool.
Most people call me Steph.
Okay, cool, Steph.
You guys call me Steph most of the time.
We called you Steph, but even when we worked with you.
Yeah.
Which we should say a little bit about that.
Yeah, we all work together.
Yes.
At the bookstore.
Oh, Bradley.
No, way to whittle it down to the
bless
nuggets
your little
of information.
Heart. Hey, I'll tell you what.
That is mean.
Yes. Steph was our manager for a while.
Yes.
If at there a was bookstore a, that we worked at yeah, all together well, in love and harmony and peace.
Yep.
Maybe.
I'm still there. I came back, but I'm still there.
And
if
she
there
was
a whip
I
to crack.
Say, Brad is back at my, I suggested. You.
Yeah.
You're welcome.
Steph's the reason I'm back.
Double-edged
again.
Double-edged sword.
Womp womp.
We all had a lot of fun, I feel like.
We did.
We did.
For a long time.
We were a really great team.
Yeah.
Even during COVID, we all went through a lot of COVID together.
Yes.
Too.
Did.
But if there was a whip to crack, it was Steph. She cracked that whip.
Mm-hmm. The independent bookseller whip.
Yep.
You did.
Read these books. Whoosh.
But you know what? I learned so much from you. I'm so glad that I worked under you, especially in the kids' store.
Thank you.
Yes. I still don't know that much about kids' books, but you did tell me that this is harking back to when I was talking about my love for Goosebumps books. You literally told us before we started recording that you guys had the little displays for Goosebumps books. And I was like, oh, I want those.
Basically, it's an I'm a totally different generation.
A little bit, but
when Brad was reading the Goosebumps, I was selling the OG Goosebumps.
Nice.
Meaning, I realize there are still Goosebumps, but
that makes you a hero
these
in my
like
eyes.
The beginning of the insanity. So
yep.
I actually have a younger brother who was very into the Goosebumps at that time.
It's because they're good. They're good and trashy. Like me.
Well, they've lasted for a reason.
They have. So now tell us about you.
I'm Steph. I've been a bookseller for 27 years altogether, 24 at the same bookstore, in many varied positions. I started out at a chain, which I think we're going to talk about a little further down the line, but... It's only been 6 months since I left the bookstore, and for the first time, you know, it's a little jarring to not be in that world anymore. So, independent bookselling is an awesome thing to be involved in. Like, it's a really great community that I don't think a ton of people outside of it understand. like what that means versus just you sell books. You sell books like Kroger sells books or Walmart sells books or whatever, but it's, there's so much more to it. So, yeah, I mean, in terms of this podcast, that is my street cred. So
did you always want to be a bookseller?
No.
The tea has been spilled.
Know that bookselling was an option? Did I even know that bookseller was a title? I mean, no. I don't think, I mean, I started at the bookstore that I was at in 1997. And even until I started there, like that was my introduction, really. I mean, later I realized I had been to independent bookstores before, but I didn't know what that was. I didn't know there was a term for it. And I didn't know you were called booksellers. You know, you were like, the bookstores that I grew up with were different and not less, but different. So no, I stumbled into it because in my early 20s, I needed a job and I like to read. And I happened into, which again, do we want to talk about this now?
Sure, let's unbox this the magical. Rules
to the wind. So basically, I graduated from high school and I didn't go to college for various reasons. And I sort of waffled around for several years doing a lot of different jobs. And I wasn't a big bookstore kid. I was a library kid. But as I was a teenager, probably more like when I started driving, even my closest bookstore was a mall bookstore. It was a Walden Books, which I think is safe to talk about because they don't exist anymore.
True. I remember Walden Books.
But we had a Walden Books, and that was the bookstore I went to. And then, you know, as I got older, there were some other smaller ones scattered. There were all the really great old little used bookstores, the ones where you could take your books back and they had an index card and they would give you credit. Like you could buy the books, take them back after you'd read them, and then they gave you credit on a little index card and you could get more books, and they'd look up your index card and figure out how much credit you had. And, you know, the credit was less than what you'd paid for it, but I would go places like that. But Walden's was my primary thing for most of my childhood. It was the place that I took my babysitting money and bought Anne of Green Gables and The Witch of Blackbird Pond and, you know, anything, Paula Danziger books and Judy Blume books and anything that I wanted to buy for myself. But really, when I was in fourth grade, we moved to a town that had a library and we lived in town and I could get there by foot or by bike. And that was like, and you know,
hold the episode.
Neil himself would be so proud of you.
I was a reader already, but I didn't really grow up in a bookish family so much. So I was the bookish one. But the fact that, I mean, and I grew up in a time that I could leave the house in the morning and come home by dark and, you know,
did you have the streetlight rule?
I could just be at the library. Well, there were only a couple occasions where my mom had to call the library and be like, you need to send her home.
I was like, at least she knew where you were.
Yeah.
I was about to say, it sounds like,
you know, running around. I will say, we were pretty free. Like, during the whole, my parents still live there. And that town was just, it was someplace where we could run. And, you know, small towns are changing and it's not the same as it used to be, but growing up, we had a dime store and we had a video store when that became a thing. And we had like a pizza place and we had, you know, a pool and we had the library. And so we could just go. But the library was beloved to me. And when we went there, I was like, there was no money to spend on books. Like we weren't going to be buying books. So
library is a perfect option.
I could take as many things out as I wanted, you know.
Like, I'm going to read all 50 of these by next week.
That's not where it started. Like early on, one of the big things in terms of where I started with books was my parents. I remember, this is my earliest memory of books because I was born in the 70s, early 70s. And so, you know, all the stuff that's available for little kids now in terms of books was not a thing. Board books were not a thing. So even as early as like three and four, My parents got me, they were subscription clubs where you got a book in the mail every month. And there was a Disney one that we did first where it was like little hardbound, like library bound type books of the Disney movies mostly. But then she did one for me that was weekly reader. And those were like more, looking back now, they were more like better told actual. And actually, when I look at it now from the perspective of having been a children's bookseller, it was like Lois Lowry and Tommy, people who I know now, who I'm like I had the enormous Crocodile by Roald Dahl, but it was in like a nice hardcover. And so you got one every month. And those are the things that I still have, my favorites of those. And those are the ones that I remember reading over and over and over again, because I had a little collection and I had a book of fairy tales that I loved, and I would just read them again, again, and again, and again. And so really it was, you know, when we moved to the town with the library, that's really when I remember having access. And that's when I really start to think about like, well, things that I like. Charlotte's Web was the first thing that I read that was a chapter book that stuck, that was like, this is a real book. Like,
you're like, ah, behold.
My cousin had a copy of Where the Sidewalk Ends by Shel Silverstein.
Love
and
it.
I Classic. Considered her to have like riches. Like, you know, it was like,
so, she got money.
We are having like nice hardcover dust jacketed books that, but we would have sleepovers. She was younger than I was, but we would have sleepovers. And I remember sitting in her bed with her, and we would read the Shel Silverstein poems and laugh and laugh and laugh. So those are kind of my early memories of books. But yeah, so anyway, I was a big library patron. I bought books when I could with my own, usually with my own money, from babysitting. I wasn't, you know, I mostly babysat, but, and then I had an aunt who was a big reader. And it's funny now because she would bring me grocery, and this was more 12 and up, but she would bring me grocery bags of her books that she was finished with. Completely age inappropriate.
Oh, I was like, oh no, but what did she bring you?
I know, but one of the things about not coming from, now as a wider family, I come from a relatively, my dad's one of seven, and he's the eldest, and I'm the eldest grandchild. And you know, if you go out into our family, we have readers, and my youngest brother is a big reader now, but the one that started with Goosebumps. But at the time, you know, the family, we didn't talk about that, but my aunt bought me, she also bought me books. She bought me my Nancy Drew books, and she bought me Little House on the Prairie, and she bought me my first copy of Little Women. And she was the one that didn't think it was weird to spend the money on books. But the stuff that she read, and now as a bookseller, I realized she was a big genre reader. Like, that's what she read.
Nice.
Which is very funny, because in my early days of bookselling, I remember I gave her a gift, and it was a very literary novel. And I thought, oh, she's going to love this. And I was a very young bookseller at the time. She hated that book.
Oh, no.
And she told me she hated that book. But looking back, I was like, I gave her the totally wrong book. Like, I gave her a book, like, knowing what I know about what she likes to read, that was not the book to give her. I just thought it was this really, like, amazing, like, I'm this brand new bookseller, and this is, like, this beautiful new literary novel that is by an author that I like. But anyway, she would bring me bags. It was, like, Danielle Steele. And Danielle Steele is probably the only author anyone would recognize, but I remember there's this amazing saga, and they were all mass market paperbacks.
Nice.
An industry term, which means those little,
the real small,
like grocery store paperback that you would see in a rack by the register, like, maybe
$7, you know.
Yeah. But there was this great series about the Australian penal colonies. Which I know more about now, but I did. But it was so, and I'm a very emotional reader. It was very sweeping and romantic. And at the age I was like, look at these adult people doing all of these adult things. And it wasn't that there was, are we allowed to say sex on this podcast?
Well, you just did. So I
mean, we're past that. Are you talking about Thornbirds by any chance?
Well, even Thornbirds would have been something like she might have given me, like something like that, where it was really soapy. Or, you know, like even the Danielle Steele, I was reading Danielle Steele when I was like 12, and you look at it from now and I'm like, I wouldn't be, and not for any judgmental reason, but I wouldn't be into that now. But from that age, I was like, this is so glamorous and grown up and, you know, that kind of stuff. But so anyway, so yeah, so that's a long way of getting to the fact that at some point through a lot of rigmarole in my early 20s or very early 20s, I ended up taking a part-time job at a calendar kiosk that Walden Books ran in the mall. And they did it during the holidays only. And it was a part-time job. It was just a way to like, and the manager had, and at this point, the Waldens that I had shopped in, they had moved in the mall to a larger location. And the thing that I loved is there was a woman named Laura who worked there, and she was the person, and this was, again, I didn't know bookseller was a thing. And I don't think she thought of herself as a bookseller. She was a salesperson who worked in a bookstore. But she had worked at that Walden Books forever. And she still worked at that Walden Books. And she was basically the only face that I had seen continuously at that bookstore. So I worked at the calendar kiosk and basically did a good enough job that when they closed the calendar kiosk, they offered me a position in the bookstore. And then I got to work with Laura, which was like, ah. And that was the first time I had people to talk to about books. And it was the thing that we all know about retail where people come and go and, you know, some people stick. And, mm-hmm. you know, being the person who stayed at the bookstore later, the second bookstore I worked at for 24 years, I saw a lot of people come and go.
Yeah.
Like there were a lot, I have a lot of eras of, you know, I worked with a certain group of booksellers for a very long time and then people would leave and you'd usher in a new group and start again. And it changes the personality of the store. And, but anyway, Walden Books was the first time that I got to work with people who were very, like, I worked with a woman who was a Wiccan. And I mean, I came from a, not rural, but we lived kind of way, way out in an area. I was a little sheltered. I went to high school. My graduating class was like 80 people. And, you know, it was small. And so anyway, I got to work with a lot of different people. And I was there for a couple of years. And you started to see the evolution of the bookstore because other places started selling books. You started to see the opening of the superstores like Walmart, Biggs, which became Rempke, but there was a Biggs that came in and Biggs was selling books and they were discounting and different things like that. But then also the mall stores started opening the bigger stores because there was like, there was Walden's and there was B. Dalton, and Walden's had a fancier mall store called Brentano's, which was kind of a little more upscale, a little bigger. But then when I started at Walden's, they were owned by Kmart and they were later bought by Borders Group. And then they started opening the Borders stores. And so Walden's was just changing very rapidly and on a road that led to the mall bookstores closing. So in the 2 years that I was there, it became a very different thing that I wasn't super happy with. But still, I didn't know. I was familiar with the bookstore that I ended up working in because I had a family member who lived near there. But because of my previously stated history with family who wasn't, they weren't into going to bookstores necessarily. So I had been there a couple of times, but not. And my biggest experience had been when I was, after I graduated from high school, I had a friend who went to college in Dayton. And so she had her own apartment. So I spent a lot of weekends in Dayton, and Books and Company and Dayton had a beautiful store in Kettering. And that was my first experience really of like a really good independent of going in. And what I look at now is just really great curation of selection, being able to find, like not walking in and being like, here's a stack and you probably had a planogram. And they were like, you know, here's a planogram. And every store that you walk into anywhere in the country is going to have the same stack in the same place because it came from on high and we're all doing it. And
is that when you kind of first figured out the independent part of it?
Even then, I didn't know what I didn't know what that was until I happened to apply at this other bookstore. And I applied at a location that they were actually closing. And they were like, okay, we're not hiring anybody for that location because we're closing, but we'll interview you for this other location, which was the original location. And it wasn't until I got that job. And here's the funny part, like you guys will recognize this now in the state of things these days. I started, my training group was like 10 people. like, and we trained for 2 weeks before we even got on the floor.
Oh, wow.
Like, we talked about culture and, like, bookselling culture and, like, what it meant to be a bookseller and what the store was trying to accomplish, like, what we were all there to do. And we did everything ourselves. That was the difference. And that still continues to be the difference. No one from on high is telling you. I mean, I'm not talking about your manager. There has to be someone who's got a plan, you know, but there's collaboration and there's an ultimate goal. And the weird thing about book selling is the selling part. Like, it's a necessary evil that you have to make money to keep your doors open. There has to be a plan there.
People. I think old people feel that way.
Yeah.
But man, I got there and I was like, these, and they had master booksellers and there were these two women, and I'm just going to say Janet and Wendy, they did a lot of our training, and I was like, these women know everything. They know everything.
You mentioned master booksellers. What is that? That's not a term that we hear very often, and we haven't really talked about it.
No.
I don't know that that's a term that everyone uses in bookselling. I think the difference is the majority of independents are going to be smaller. And they don't have a ton of employees. And, you know, you're going to be distinguished by the people who are in a management role or perhaps like an event planning role or a media role or something like that versus the people who are running the floor and doing most of the floor work. And then you may have people who are more experienced. And I'm sure in different stores, depending on how many staff people they have, there's some recognition somehow. And then you have fewer bookstores who are independents but are larger scale, and the bigger you are, the more you have to have things in place to more officially recognize that kind of thing. So a master bookseller is someone who just has a lot of knowledge, but it's, my thing is, it's not about just having the knowledge and being like, oh, I have the knowledge and I'm keeping it all cozy to myself.
It's my knowledge.
I'm so smart and I know everything about books and I'm a big snob about it and all of this. It's the people who have this knowledge and experience and love for it, and they just shine it out to everybody and make you want to come in and be like, I want to do that. I want to know that. I want to learn how to do that for a customer. Or, you know, the people that then customers come in and are like, where is that person? Because I trust them and I want to talk to them about books. And it doesn't even mean you agree on things about books or which ones you like. But Wendy and Janet really shined a light that I didn't know existed. And then I just jumped in, man. And it was... There were so many opportunities for so long. Like, I did so many because at the time, everything got done in that store. And coming from a chain where you had the home office and you had a district manager and you had a regional manager and you had your general manager and you had all of these, there was none of that. It was like, I started out in the children's store as a bookseller and then the event coordinator. I became the event coordinator and we were doing all of our own events. We were booking costumes and planning all of our events and we were booking authors and I had a desk and I had hotel. You know, this was before the internet. So you had a phone book, you know, and a phone and some file folders and information on hotels. But the great thing was, and that's what kept me there for so long, like I had so many opportunities to do different things and learn different things and meet people, and I just kept moving up. So it wasn't until I stepped in those doors and started training there that I understood anything about independent bookselling or what a bookseller meant.
It's interesting, listening to you talk, I did not ever consider being a bookseller when I was a kid. I don't think I knew what that was either.
A librarian, like a school librarian, librarian, an English teacher, you know, those would have been the book related careers that, I mean, to me, looking at the person who worked at the mall store, that felt like a job. And I'm just saying I have a very different perspective on it now, obviously, but that was never the kind of job that as a high school student in particular would have been considered a good career option. Like, it wouldn't have been considered a career. It would have been a job you can do for now until you move on to a career.
Right.
Book selling is a career. Like, I mean, it can still be a job. A lot of people do it as a job, like, while they're in college or they left college and they're not sure what to do next. So I'm going to go work at a bookstore for a while. Like, we have a lot of people like that. But I've worked with a ton of people and met a ton of people over the years who are like, this is what I'm doing with my life.
It's which a is, lifestyle choice,
which
I think.
Is accepted now. You know, I mean, it's a different world, I think, now.
And I'm excited about that because I do think booksellers kind of make the world go around and they make it a better place.
Because we make you read.
We do. And we know stuff.
Yeah, we know things.
Well, I think the bookselling, I think especially the independent bookselling world, they're going to continue everything that's going on in the world and everything that keeps changing. They're the people who are going to continue to challenge how you look at the world, and not through any like judgmental lens, but that's what books are. Like, every book is an opportunity. It's an opportunity to, even if it's just, I don't like the word fluff because I think there are so many good books that are fluff. Well, not even fluff, but I'm like, well, number one, I can get carried away by a book that is very badly written if you're a good storyteller. Like, if you're a good storyteller, but your craft is perhaps not up to par, you can still get me. But there's also stuff that's just fun. And I'm like, there's a place for that. Like, I realize that. And the other thing is, there are so many types of books, like independent bookstores, independent booksellers. Everybody has their thing. And, you know, so if you want the highbrow, I only read literary fiction. I'm never going to have
literary fiction.
I'm never going to have, you know, romance. I mean, some independent bookstores don't have romance sections, which I'm a romance reader. And I think that. But, you know, everybody can choose, and there's a bookstore for everyone. And, you know, there are books for everyone. And it's just a matter of finding what speaks to you. But people with reading brains are better people, because whether you...
I'm quoting you on that.
Whether you just read... It's true. Whether you just read mysteries or you just read whatever, whatever you're reading, you're going to think about the world differently, because whoever or whatever happens in that book is likely not something you ever have seen and probably possibly in your life. Like, even if it's about people living in a house in a neighborhood, it's not the neighborhood you live in, and it's not the neighbors that you have. So it's going to crack your mind open a little bit, no matter what it is.
That's the power of books. Yep. And I think for me, when I first started working at a bookstore, it was this idea that you don't judge what other people read, you know? And I think that was pretty amazing, especially coming from like an English degree, where we do judge in academia. You come in and you're like, it doesn't matter what you read, as long as you're reading and you love it, because that's ultimately what it's about. And that's definitely what it's about when we're talking about kids. And kids' books and Newbery winners.
Or adult children. Like
or adult
me.
Children.
Well, and I think there's a gateway drug. There's always a gateway drug. So I do believe, as a bookseller, I believe in reading as a profession as well as reading for pleasure. So that was something I really felt strongly as a bookseller. Like, don't just read in your wheelhouse. Like, you need to challenge yourself to read as a professional. Like, what is out there, and what, because it's fine to read whatever you want. I don't care. But especially for kids, like, if they want to start, if they're starting out reading, and I know some people think this is horrible, but if, you know, all you can get a kid to read is a movie tie-in book, then fine. But I do think the job of the bookseller is to get to know that reader and develop a relationship so that there's trust there, and you slowly inch them toward, you find those right fits and you step up that ladder. Because I do think classics are important. I do think, especially in, not, I don't want to say classics are important, especially in kids' books, but I do think backlist, which is older books, plays a huge part in kids' books. And I think the worst thing that happens sometimes is you get too focused on all the trendy new stuff that speaks to today. And that's what's coming out now. And that's what we're reading. There's this great, just treasure trove of stuff that came out ages ago that is still relevant and worthwhile and adds more dimension and substance to your, you know, reading life. So I do think, you know, if you come in and you're a romance reader, spectacular. If you're reading the junkiest romance there is, good for you, great. I don't care. But I'm going to try to nudge you in like, the direction.
Maybe try this one.
You're gonna be like, have you ever thought about this author? And it's a good, you know, it's a little lateral move, but through some lateral moves, maybe we'll find something.
There's bound to be a step better in there somewhere.
So I do think that's the role of a bookseller, is not to be like, okay, you're only going to read highbrow, or you're, you know, and one of my favorite annoying things is the people who would come in and be like, I only read New York Times bestsellers. And I'm like, that's such a, okay, I can't say
it's
that.
Yeah.
I started to say.
Let's be PG at least.
No, I was going to say garbage, and that's strong wording.
Oh,
that's a fighting word.
I know.
But there's a lot that goes into the New York Times bestseller list. And I think it would come from people who looked at it as a quality of writing. And I'm not saying that things that are on that list aren't quality writing. Mm-hmm. People, there's a game that's played to get things on that list. So I do think there's prestige that's there that, you know, I don't believe in that, but I do believe in let's keep pushing toward, you know, let's discover like new things and new authors and people who are writing, like people who are really like digging in and playing with ideas and the world and creative thinking and all of that kind of stuff, because it just, for your brain.
So I feel like you could use the New York Times bestsellers or whatever. You could be like, well, this one could be on there because it's just that good.
Yeah, and like, it should be on there.
I feel
there.
Like that could, that's a little bookseller secret. I feel like that might be.
I think it's important to remember what the New York Times bestseller list is. It's in many ways the books that sell the best. They usually have bigger names behind them. They have more money behind them. Publishers put money behind those. And it's also important to remember that there are the littler books like that come out in between those ones that are just as good and just as important.
Well, and I think we all realize from us working in a bookstore, and again, this is the great thing about independence, is you are the bookstore in your community. And that's one of my favorite things about independence. Whatever city you go into, if you go into their independent bookstore, whether it's in a bigger city like New York, which is just an embarrassment of riches in terms of things like that. But, you know, I got to go to Orcas Island a couple years ago for my brother's wedding, and tiny little bookstore on this, like in the part of the island where we were. And I went in, and my favorite thing to do is find the person who owns the bookstore and talk to them, because I'm like, what is it like to run a bookstore here? Like, there's hardly anyone here, and you're far away from the mainland. You know, like, how does that look for you? What does it look like in the wintertime? What are your challenges? Do you have the same challenges we have, you know, where we are? And yes, they do, which is mind-boggling. But then also you go in and you look at, like, the regional section, and the regional section in the Pacific Northwest is very different than the regional section in Cincinnati.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's just so much fun, but they know who their people are. And again, they're going to curate their store based on what they know as a literary person. But then also as a business person, but then meaning they're going to have the New York Times bestsellers because that is good business.
Mm-hmm.
But then also they're going to know their customer, and what maybe they have a huge cooking base, you know, like a ton of the people who shop in their store love cookbooks. So we're going to have an especially good selection of cookbooks. Maybe you live in the Bible Belt and you are going to have a fantastic Christian slot, like whatever it is. But that's the great thing about indies, that is different from chains where the decisions are being made in an office further away. And that doesn't mean that the people who work in a chain aren't tweaking and tailoring and trying, but I think it's a harder.
So talking about bestseller lists, if we had a Steph bestseller list, just a few, like, for example, what are some of your favorite Newberries? Because we did talk a little bit about kids, books, or what you're reading right now that you would love and you'd be like hand selling. What would that look like?
Favorite Newberry. I mean, I think I really struggle with favorites, which I know. Had this conversation off the
we
microphone.
Did. Yes. Maybe not favorites,
after
maybe.
27 years of bookselling, it's like there's an insane jumble in my head. And it's different times. Like there are different reading places that I'm in or different moments in the bookstore where we were all behind a book and we were just freaking out because it was something that we got an advanced reader copy of. And you were like, oh my God, we all read it and it was so good and we can't wait to tell everybody about it. And it's going to be insane. Which, you know, that book now, you're kind of in the zeitgeist moment and you're like, oh my God. But then personally, like you go through evolutions and different things mean different things to me at different times. So I will say the things that have been a continuing thread through my life would be anything I read as a kid. Like those are going to be the things that no matter what, that's always going to be a favorite, no matter what. Like that's still fundamentally, and we haven't said this on this podcast, but at heart, I'm a children's bookseller. Like for the last 10 years, I have not been a children's bookseller, but I still at heart am. And I think it just selling book, like doing books with kids and families and stuff just hits on a different level. And the thing I used to say to all the people at the bookstore that we worked at, which had a children's bookstore and a not children's bookstore, was if you don't get them reading now, there aren't going to be any readers 20 years down the road. So you either grow readers now.
Can we put that on a t-shirt?
Or you won't bumper sticker.
Yeah, we need that.
Or you won't have customers later, you know, or readers, you know. So it's just kids who grow up reading are different kinds of kids. I'm sorry. They are. And yeah. It doesn't matter. Yeah. They're more creative. And it doesn't mean you have to be an artist. Or I'm not, when I say creative, I'm like, but just creative thinking and being able to like think about the world differently. So I'm a big advocate of that. So I love kids' books. And the thing I'm reading right now is a kid's book.
So, what is it?
What is it? Tell us.
You
dish,
know
dish,
what
dish.
It is, Cara.
Yeah, but I don't.
I'm rereading The Westing Game by Ellen Raskin. And it's a Newbery.
It isn't. It's a great book.
And so that, so no, it tends to be
never
the
read it.
Current thing that I'm reading. And also, I'm going to say I went through when I left the bookstore, I went through a really bad reading slump, like a months and months long reading slump of just skimming things and not being able to dig in. And I also do what I refer to as comfort rereading, where when I can't dig into something, I find things I know that I love on my shelves or I check the, you know, and I reread because I'm like, there's a comfort.
I do
for
that
me
too.
In that. So just in the last month-ish, I've read more than I read in the previous 5 months since I left the bookstore. I think there was some grieving that had to happen, and reading was very tied to my job. So and the people that I worked with and the people that I helped in the store and all of our great regular customers, and you know, I would start to read something. I'd be like, oh my God, this person's going to love this. Oh my God. Oh my God. I want to put this at the register. Oh my God. We need to do a table. Oh my God. And, you know, and I really had to like get away from that thought process. So in terms of being a bookseller, like my brain works like that in terms of when I'm reading, like it can be for my own enjoyment, but I'm still thinking about
who's going to love this,
the store, and who's going to love it, and how do I get in front of people? Like that was my thing at the bookstore. Like, how do I get all of these things in front of people? Like, I was at the bookstore last night, the bookstore in which we worked, and I kept seeing these things.
He shall not be named. I feel like that we're doing that.
But I kept finding things, and I'm like, I was taking pictures, and I'm like, I'm gonna message this to somebody and be like, put this at the register. Put it at the register.
Like, you being like a little spy, a bookseller spy.
Like, why isn't this on display somewhere? This is
you
great.
Know what? I'm going to keep my eye out at the store.
Oh, I didn't move anything.
No, I'm going to see
you
if these people just start
soundtrack.
Start, you know,
yeah.
Putting up certain displays. I'll be like, did Steph tell you to
do that? I
saw
the most beautiful board book in kids. It's an alphabet book and it's like a seek and find situation, but it's very beautifully done. And I'm like, it was in the back corner of the store, and I'm like, take this and put it at the register. Like, it's such a great, anyway. Okay, so favorite books, favorite new, so I am reading The Westing Game again, which I first read The Westing Game as an adult. So what I will say is I did not develop a love for children's books as an adult until I was in my 20s. And it was before Joseph Beth. So when I worked at Walden Books, a customer ordered a book called The Library by David Smalls and Sarah Stewart. And this hits several of your questions on my thing, but...
Well, you've answered a lot of them.
It was just... How?
Yeah, it was this is the first book, in terms of what got me into children's books, it was the first book that made me love children's books as an adult. And years later, so I have actually brought it to show and tell you guys, but I ordered myself also, and I will say at this time, we had to look things up on microfiche.
Ooh.
So this was before the internet, so you didn't have a PC to look things up. But it came in and I was like, this is a beautiful book. Well, Sarah Stewart and David Small are married and they've collaborated on many books. They won a Newbery for The Gardener, or not Newbery, Caldecott. They won a Caldecott for The Gardener. David Small has gotten Caldecott or honor for several things. He got an award for So You Want to Be President. And then he's gotten the honor a couple of times. And David Small has done things on his own and also with his wife. And I geek out over illustration. Illustration was also my entree. Illustration is something that from my childhood, like that was the thing that is like a through line for me on kids' books. But in 2009, we won a children's book selling award and I got to go to New York to accept the award. And at the time, David Small, who I have been a fan of since 1995, and this was 2009, David Small did an amazing graphic memoir called Stitches about his childhood. It was a National Book Award finalist. And he was at this, it was the Book Expo America in New York City is where it was. And that's where our award was being given there at the Children's Breakfast. And I got to meet Julie Andrews there. So,
wow. You name dropping.
In terms of experiences.
Name dropper.
Got to go.
But that's awesome.
Yeah, yes. They gave the award at the Children's Breakfast and we got to go into the green room and it was Julie Andrews, Tommy DePaola, Meg Cabot, and Amy Krauss Rosenthal, who was lovely and unfortunately has passed away since then. But Julie Andrews introduced herself to me, so
wow.
Life moment. Hey. But anyway, David Small was at that conference and he was signing Stitches and I was like, we're gonna stand in line. I had I was the manager of the kids store at the time and my sort of second in command person went with, we got to go, we drove to New York for this.
Ooh.
And so much fun. And I was like, we're going to have to wait in line. However long the line is, we're going to have to wait because I have to meet him. And we got up to the front and I said to him, I'm like, you're the reason I got into children's book selling. Like, you're, and he's like, oh, Sarah's here. His wife.
Oh.
He did the book with. He's like, she's in the back. Do you want to meet her?
Oh.
And she took me in the back and they have a beautiful farm in Michigan and she showed me pictures and they signed my books and
that's
kind of where my initial love of children's books came from. But The Westing Game I read as an adult because when I started at the bookstore we were talking about favorite books from childhood and one of the adult booksellers said my all-time favorite book was The Westing Game by Ellen Raskin and so I read it. Fantastic. And I'm rereading it. Still fantastic. And just from a time where the literary scene was, I'm sorry, cooler. Like, there was just something about, like, the New York literary scene and, like, the 70s. And so, you know, you just hear, like, back in those times where there were, like, these epic book editors who discovered, like, when people... There's a really great book, and I'm not going to remember her name, but it's called Dear Genius. And it's about the book editor at Harper who discovered, like, she published Goodnight Moon, and she there's just a laundry list of things that are still out there and still amazingly popular that she discovered and published. And I'm like, it was just a time that is different than now. So anyway, The Westing Game is fantastic. It's a sort of puzzle. book, and it's beautiful. My favorite Newbery, which anyone who knows me won't be surprised by this, is When You Reach Me by Rebecca Stead, which was published in, I want to say 2000, I think 2009. It was published in 2009. She won the Newbery, and we loved it so much. And again, this was the person that I worked with in the kids store at the time. It had been she and I really running things for quite some time. And so we had a really good routine. And we had discovered this book early on as an advanced reader copy and were freaking out about it. And we loved it so much. And we had such a good relationship with our publisher folk. We got Rebecca Stead booked for that January, right, as the book came out. And then she won the Newbery. And so we had the Newbery award-winning author coming to our store for an event the January that she won the Newbery.
I'll bet that was it packed? Because
This is another good good book selling story. Yeah. Because it was January in Ohio, and the night of her event there was a really bad snowstorm, and we lost all power in like a blocks long radius. We did the event anyway in the dark with Rebecca Stead.
What?
And 150 people.
Oh my gosh.
Spectacular.
And it would have been bigger, I think, but we found out later that some people thought we were closed because it was dark. So we had I want to say it was like 150 people, I don't know that I remember accurately, but Rebecca Stead was such a good sport about it. And we had flashlights, and I was like, it's like we're having a really great slumber party with our favorite author. And we were all so excited. And it was we had so much fun. But anybody, I don't know how many people you have listened to this podcast.
Millions.
Let's just get it out. Yes. Everyone should read When You Reach Me. It's an homage to Wrinkle in Time, but you don't have to have read Wrinkle in Time to understand it. It's set in the 70s in New York City. And I've read everything that Rebecca Stead has ever written. And she just is the most brilliant writer for children because she does not write down to children. Like, she doesn't overwrite. Her books are succinct. Like, they're not overly. But man, you're just loving when you read. Like, When You Reach Me all the way through is so smart. And you're so like, what? And then you get to the end and she just twists your brain into a knot because you're like, that's an amazing ending. What was happening the whole, that's what was happening the whole time.
There's a lot of twists and turns.
Even adults, and I recommend children's books to adults, but as a general rule. But
I think they should be read by adults.
and I've had book clubs who've read it with Wrinkle in Time. So you can read both and compare and contrast. So.
Well, we are almost out of time, but I will say you did recommend that to me.
Yep.
It was one of the first books you recommended I read as a kids bookseller, and I did love it. That and The Blue Sword by Robert McKinley, whom I love so much.
It's an honor.
So, Steph, you have amazing taste in books.
It's an honor to have you here.
I like talking about books.
I know.
Yes. I like talking about bookselling, so...
Yeah. Which is why you're the first person we invited.
The very first guest on our show.
That's also, like, you've done it for...
I feel like I talk too much, though. I feel like I get really excited.
Well, that means that we don't have to ask you questions because you answer...
We get to relax.
You answered all of our questions that we had because you just talked about
But you had so many amazing stories.
Yeah.
And so thank you so much for doing this.
Thank you, guys. Super fun. Yes.
Very fun. We'll have to have you back for more stories.
Absolutely.
Yep.
I want to hear about so much more.
I know. Harry Potter.
We didn't. You have to come back for that because I think that's
we'll
a whole thing in and of itself.
We could do
we'll have to crack that egg.
Harry Potter,
All right. So keep listening,
yep.
people, and maybe you will hear us talking about Harry Potter and all the events.
So.
And we are
follow
out.
Us.
Follow us.
Subscribe, rate and review,
like,
all those things that you do. Because now that rhymes, I'm going to keep doing that.
Do it.
You're very welcome for that. Okay. All right. Well, have fun. Make wise choices.